Hey guys, Brian here. Just before we get started, I just wanted to let you know that this episode is a little different than normal. It's actually going to be a longer episode. If you notice the time code, it is 3 times as long as my first episode, but I'm doing something a little different. Wanted to share my story and my background of how I got into development. So it's a bit long-winded. I thank you for downloading this and listening to it. If you make it through the whole way, much appreciated. But I just felt like I needed to get my story out there for how I got into developing, and also why I started learning how to program. So again, thanks and enjoy. Episode 2 of This Developing Life. So this is the second installment of this podcast, This Developing Life, and a story of my life. I'm looking forward to the more episodes that are coming, but obviously, again, I put my 2 weeks in last week. I have another week to go. This week's been filled with lots of packing and moving stuff around. The small move is going to be this weekend. A big move will be sometime after that. We're not going to be moving our stuff cross-country until we find a place first, so I'm going out first and doing some scouting and some recon work. I'll be staying in Oakland, so if anybody is in that area and wants to reach out and tell me their experiences, definitely reach out. I've given out my email, hello@briandouglas.me, and I'm also Brian Lamar on Twitter. More than likely, since you're listening to this, and this is not on iTunes, as far as discovery, you probably already know my Twitter at this point, but if you don't, it's 2 L's on the Lamar. So, just as a pre-warning, this is going to be an episode of me sharing my story, but not my story as it's untold, as it's going on, as I plan on doing in the future, but actually this is going to be more of a recap of what I've done so far to get up to this point. I am very excited for what's in store, but I felt like maybe I'd just take a time to do an origin story of not just how I got into development or what I did in the past year, but also what I did the years before to get to this point to actually switch over to development. I haven't actually done a blog post or been on the podcast or anything like that prior to this, so this will be all new stuff. So I thank you for you guys listening, and definitely look forward to share this. So before I can start my story, I have to take the time to share who I am and how I got here, I guess, to make it an easier understanding for the decisions that I've made so far to get to this point to even decide to move across country to San Francisco for a job. So I went to school in college, got a degree in finance from the University of South Florida. My hope was to become a financial advisor. That was my dream the entire time I was in college, and that's what I was aiming for, but graduated in 08. Not much happening as far as finance. That was about the year after the housing bubble crashed, and then the market also dropped in between there about, I don't know how many points, maybe 700 points, but it was around 600 at the time of my graduation. So nobody was really taking on young, up-and-coming investment trainees just because there wasn't too much of an investment happening at the time. So I didn't get a job in finance. And within the Tampa area, I found out very quickly that if you didn't have the experience, I did have some internship experience, but I decided not to go with that company that I ended up working with. I worked with a company called Levin Financial. They did insurance rather than investments. Their investments, as investment vehicles, were whole life insurance, which wasn't what I was looking to get into. I'm not a big fan of whole life insurance, and it was a very boring investment. I wanted to get into stocks and mutual funds. So when I attempted applying to most places, I didn't pass the actual background. The check that you do prior to getting an interview, you had to do like a online screening questionnaire. That's what I'm looking for. So I didn't pass the questionnaire, more than likely because I didn't have either the sales experience I didn't have up front, or it was probably because I didn't have the mindset of a financial sales professional. I guess I was just too honest with my questions. I'm not sure, to be honest. I'm just kind of speculating. Or maybe I just wasn't a good fit for finance. But yeah, I guess we'll never know. Most of the people that I went to school with and got jobs in finance, it's either they got on with the companies they interned with, which obviously that was not an opportunity. That wasn't a choice for me. I decided to go walk away from that internship and not take a job with them. Or they just kind of knew somebody before going into industry, their uncle, friend, neighbor. previous employer. And I didn't have that going for me because during the entire time of college, actually, I worked for the YMCA in the summer camp and after school care. So that was kind of a bad move on my part. I didn't try to get in the financial field prior to trying to get in the financial field, if that makes any sense. So I kind of went against me. So, you know, if there's any recommendations I can give to other people who are trying to get into a specific field is, even if it's an internship or a low-paying job, you want to make sure you're in that field and you make a name for yourself, even if it's a small name, so that way you can get some references and stuff like that. So that's where I was. So I ended up taking a office job at the YMCA at that time, since I already worked there. I took an office job doing collections for the gyms. And when I say collections, I really don't even count this as collections, because I was basically calling any members that were past due for about a month or 2 months, asking what they would like to pay. If they didn't like to pay, I'd just close their account. It was not really, there's no hounding involved. It was very simple collections, at least my experiences. Actually, didn't hate it, but it wasn't something that I really wanted to do long term. So spent about a year there until I got an opportunity to do some more data entry at a company called Tech Data. I ended up interviewing and getting a job as a temp. So I was a temp for about 9 months. And then on top of that, after being hired, I then did the same role, but as a paid role for another year after that. So I spent about 19 months. I actually spent about 21 months doing that job, just shy of 2 years. I'd worked the second shift, which was 11 to 7, so I had a lot of free time, so to speak. There wasn't much happening after 6 o'clock at that company, but they, just in case something did happen for either West Coast hours, I needed to be there to make things happen, I guess. So I did that job very well. I made a name for myself within that team, but then I was also extremely overqualified for that position. There was an influx of people with degrees that took that position just because there wasn't much happening around 2008, 2009, 2010 as far as jobs locally. Especially coming out of college, and if you didn't have much of what you, if you didn't know what you wanted to be when you grew up, you basically ended up in that job. At that time, I had met my wife and started dating my wife, and between that time, we got engaged, and I knew I needed to make more money eventually, so I started looking elsewhere, and I still tried very heavily trying to get into finance and trying to get a financial advisor was a specific title I was really aiming for. Researching companies, applying, not getting interviews, kind of trying to make a network of people maybe that I could probably get in with. And nothing was really falling. So at that time, I spent a lot of time listening to podcasts and surfing the net. I had a very strong interest in technology. Always had a strong interest in technology. You know, I did what most kids did. I tinkered with my Windows machine, was able to run, you know, Doom and Wolfenstein through DOS back in the 90s when I was younger, and even helped my brother build some computers after that, which was interesting to say the least. You know, it wasn't too crazy. It was just basically installing RAM and screwing in parts, and yeah, so I was always a tinkerer of, you know, HTML. At that time, I don't think CSS was a big thing. At that time, I think I even tinkered I built an Android app through YouTube, and didn't really do much with that. Got a Java book and kind of walked away from that just because I felt like I didn't have enough time to do it. So I ended up not really following through with learning Java. Plus the fact that learning Java on your own was pretty hard. But I didn't really, I barely even scratched the surface on that. So that leads me to, I basically needed to find a job that was better, that was higher paying, that I could eventually, and at this whole time I was actually still living at home with my mom. So I needed to, for one, move out of my mom's house, and for two, make enough of income to actually get married. And I ended up doing lots of research. I actually interviewed for a financial analyst position once I figured that I was probably not going to get some job in investments at that time. Even though I think the market kind of turned around by then and they were hiring, but I just couldn't get past that initial phone screen and that initial questionnaire online. And so I actually interviewed for an analyst job and ended up not getting it. I ended up bombing the interview, to be honest. I didn't come prepared. I didn't have questions to ask. I think when they asked me if I had any questions, I said, no. And yeah, I just didn't present myself very well. I don't think I didn't even wear a tie in the interview. And this company was very much for ties, especially in interviews. And I didn't wear a tie, didn't wear a suit. So I basically, needless to say, I bombed the interview. So even when I got feedback, I didn't get any feedback. I actually had to reach out to them and ask, you know, what the deal was. And I did not get a second interview or much of anything later. So once I basically gave up on getting any sort of financial job at that point, just because I couldn't get my foot in the door, despite having a 4-year degree in finance, which, you know, that goes to show I have no degree in computer science, but yet a software engineering job today, but I couldn't get a finance job to save my life. So while I spent all that time, you know, doing the job that I could do with my eyes closed again, I did a lot of researching into interview techniques and different jobs in the area, what jobs I could get within that company that were higher paying, that were better. And I saw a lot of jobs that were paying, you know, $40,000 to $50,000 a year in sales. So I decided I would just go ahead and try to do sales. You know, I could make the most money at that company at that time. I might as well just try to get a sales job. So eventually I applied to a job that I thought maybe I'd be fit for. I was working with a specific vendor, which was Cisco. And I feel like I knew enough about Cisco that I could get a job selling Cisco. So I ended up getting the interview, actually doing very well in the interview. I think I did an extreme amount of studying and researching not only the vendor, but also sales and sales techniques and interview answers. And one of the questions that I asked, because again, I didn't ask any questions in any of my previous interviews, but I realized that I needed to have questions and I needed to take notes. I got to the point where I'd get into interviews and I actually had a notebook, I had a folder, one of the professional folders that you keep your resumes in. Well, I had a notepad in it. So I would literally just write down random notes while the interviewee or the manager was talking to me, just to make it seem like I was very interested in what they were saying. But every now and then I'd write like keywords, so that way if I needed to ask a question specifically to what they said, I'll just write down a couple words. But other than that, I was just writing down gibberish, just to make it look like I was really intensely listening and writing down notes. But it was just more of me kind of so I didn't have to look him in the eye, so that if I was nervous or whatnot, I was able to put my attention elsewhere. And I kind of use that as kind of a, I guess it could be more of like a, is an interview technique, but I guess it's it could be even a sales technique, because I use that even in sales when doing one-on-ones with customers or influential people. I would just pretend to write notes, which is quite interesting. I highly recommend that to anybody else, that if you're nervous in an interview and you just need to push your attention elsewhere, start writing notes, bring a notepad, write down random notes, don't draw pictures because they can see that. But yeah. But what I was getting at, so I had this one question that I ended up finding on some blog post about interviewing. And it was a question that actually went over very well, so much that it went over very well in multiple interviews after that. So I didn't get this job, just a spoiler alert. But the question that I asked was, it was always the last question I asked, and that they would ask me, you know, so do you have any questions? And I said, yeah, I do have a question, just one last question. So after reviewing my interview, after reviewing my resume and going through this interview, is there anything that on my resume that maybe I can clear up that maybe would prevent me from, that's missing, that would maybe prevent me from getting this job? And I would always, you know, have that last line. I'd play around the words before that, but is there anything I can clear up to help that would prevent me from getting this job? It was basically the question that would tell me whether or not I got the job, or whether or not I did well in the interview. Because it basically put all the cards on the table, and it just showed my assertiveness just to get, you know, either the rejection answer response or the, you know, the good response to say, no, you know, you did very well. And for the most part, most people have a tough time of giving rejection on the first meeting, especially if it's a first interview. And so I would find that no matter what, I always get a positive response. But if it was a really extremely good response, then I knew I did very well in the interview. And this first interview, I did do very well. So much that I got a second interview. And then when it was time to get response back, I did not get, I did get a response back that I did not get the job, but I did something else that I never did prior to that. I actually sent in an email, a thank you email. Thank you for, you know, taking the time for interviewing me, taking the time, you know, to share your responses to, you know, how I answered the questions and things. And then I would respond with, you know, is there anything I can work on in case there's a, you know, a future position available? What can I do? And most of the time was a sales experience, but they also said, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. You did very well. And that thank you email I sent back did went over so well that the manager actually responded back to me right away and said, you know, that was a great response. Despite the fact that you're not getting the job, you know, you responded very positively. And she basically told me that she knew I was going to do well. And that was it. And then literally 2 weeks later, I got another email from the same manager saying, hey, I have got a manager friend that's looking for the same position, just a different company, or not a different company, a different team. And would you be interested in interviewing with her? And, you know, it wasn't the same vendor. It was a different vendor, but they obviously needed help, and she was impressed with me enough that she was going to put her reputation on the line to actually get me the interview. And I was pretty ecstatic. I mean, I interviewed for that job, and again, spoiler, I got that job. But I used the same techniques that I used, you know, just basically the soft skills that, you know, you need to do to operate within, you know, corporate America. And if just a little bit of a plug, I haven't read this entire book, but there's a book called Soft Skills for Programmers. I mean, the author is John Sames. He does the Get Up and Code podcast. Highly recommend it. I only skimmed through the first chapter, but I've heard the story so many times, and I've heard like the pitch on it so many times that I'm pretty much impressed. I plan on buying the book and reading it on my flight out to San Francisco. I don't think it's that big of a book. I think it's about 300 pages, but yeah, highly recommend, you know, skimming that, or at least looking up John Sames and his Simple Programmer blog and hearing what he has to say about soft skills, because I think a lot of the skills that I've kind of already mentioned and what he mentions in the book, because I've skimmed through the actual table of contents to see what the book was about, I was already practicing. So it's very important that, you know, you have your interview skills and you have your personable skills. I mean, if you can't talk to a potential manager or a CTO, then it's no matter how good you are in code, it's going to hurt you in the long run. So, you know, you have to have that ability to, you know, have the soft skills to be able to, you know, follow up with emails and send thank you notes and stuff like that. And that's just interviewing, but there's also some other soft skills you could do, you know, as far as making your names for yourself. But other than that, yeah, check out that book. So I ended up getting a job in sales. And again, this is all going to tie into how I got in here today as a software engineer and even considering moving across country. But I spent about 2 years in that job, doing that sales job. And within that 2 years, I got promoted twice. And this is with no sales experience. I forgot to mention that. I didn't have any sales experience. And that was one of the things that hurt me a lot, trying to get a sales job and also trying to get a finance job, which is ironic that you would need so much sales experience for a finance job. But yeah, so I just went to work every day, worked hard, did what I needed to do. And I think half of what sales is doing stuff that nobody else wants to do. So I would constantly, if we had to reach out for an event, and nobody wanted to reach out for events because it was horrible. Like, we had to invite people to free events, and we'd pay for their flights, pay for their meals, pay for the hotel, and people still didn't want to go. It was a very hard thing to do for some reason. And we're talking like Clearwater, Tampa, Florida, flying people out to there during the wintertime, and people still didn't, you know, want to go. So I would just basically spend all day. I'd make like 20 calls a day. Sometimes more, and spend most of my day on the phone and just doing what I need to do, responding to emails, not really goofing around so much, just trying hard and making sure I can make sales and follow up on potential sales for, you know, repeat business. And I did that, and just the surprise of me, I think only 1 month I was there, I did not get a bonus, and that was only because the market at that time was actually not doing very well. I think it was around this time of the year. I think it's pretty slow for the technology field as far as people buying stuff. And I forgot to mention, TechData is a wholesaler, So they sell IT equipment to businesses, so it's B2B sales. I first started in the power and cooling, so warehouses, not warehouses, IT data centers, so power and cooling for them, backup power. And then I worked at another vendor that did networking, so networking gear, which was a Cisco competitor. Yeah, I just did very well, so much that in my second year, I got promoted twice. I got promoted the first time right after I decided I was going to start going to programming. So I think about 2 summers ago, that's when I officially decided I wasn't going to do finance. I got my sales experience, and I figured, you know, I tried a couple other companies, didn't get any responses. And then that's when I got my last response saying I didn't pass the questionnaire as far as having the financial professional experience or the mindset, I guess is what they said. And so I ended up giving that up. And then about a month later, into the fall of 2012, I got a email from a recruiter asking to see if I was interested in interviewing for a job in Minneapolis. And, you know, I had no desire to move outside of my state, but I knew that if I could move and make it better for my family, because at that time I actually had a baby on the way at the time. So me and my wife were already married. We had a baby on the way, and I got this opportunity to interview for a company in Minneapolis. So I, you know, at that time I didn't interview for maybe a year and a half prior to that. So, but I still had the same skills. I still had the same notes that I used. So I did a Skype interview with the manager and the CEO of the company. And this is actually a very large company too, but I still interviewed with the CEO, which was, it wasn't the CEO, it was a VP, a C-level VP. And yeah, did very well. So well that they actually responded to me and said, you know, I did very well in the interview. And they gave me feedback right away too. And they said they'd get back to me. So once I reached out, I actually had to reach out to them maybe about 2 weeks later. And they ended up telling me I didn't get the job, mostly because, you know, the distance of me moving to Minneapolis. And there were quite a few more candidates that were closer within the area that were qualified, so they ended up going with one of them. But they said, you know, if I lived within that area, if I lived up there, I would have got the job in a heartbeat, because I guess the way I responded, the knowledge I knew about their industry, I already knew because of what the job I was already doing. And that was kind of disappointing to find out that I didn't get the job because I didn't live in a certain area. But other than that, it wasn't that big of a deal for me, because it was Minneapolis and I lived in sunny Florida, so I wasn't missing out on anything other than a bigger paycheck. So it kind of gave me the drive to kind of look elsewhere, because if it wasn't for that interview, I probably would have still be working at Tech Data and doing the same thing that I'm doing now, in this basically climbing the ladder. But that interview actually kind of helped me realize that maybe I had a skill set that maybe I could be used elsewhere, and maybe I could actually, you know, use those skills outside of Tech Data and get a better job. Speed up to a few months after that, my son was born back in August of 2013. And to our surprise, we had a perfect pregnancy. No issues, went through all the appointments, you know, no problems. But he was actually born almost 3 months early. It was to our surprise, we had no idea. But we ended up staying in the hospital for about 10 weeks. It was a pretty hard time. The hospital, we got shipped to a hospital in the heart of Tampa. We spent 10 weeks going back and forth, basically slept at the hospital every other night. The hospital from our house is about 24 miles, so we just didn't want to make the drive back and forth every night. So we ended up sleeping in his hospital room. Most of the nights I slept on the floor, my wife had the couch. And it was pretty hard, to say the least. But it was hard, but it also helped me realize that, you know, going through that and going through such trauma and tragedy, I at that time in my life, I don't think I've ever gone through anything in a similar fashion. I never had to rely on, you know, doctors for anything. And I never knew, I was never unsure of anything other than, you know, or not unsure of not getting in the financial field. I was just not unsure of something like that. Unsure of if my wife was going to be okay, or if my newly born son was going to be okay. So I had a lot of time to think in that hospital. I had some time off from work or during that time. And I felt like I just needed to do something else. I didn't want to do sales anymore. I kind of wanted to just do something that would be more fulfilling. And I had lots of ideas of what I could do, business ideas, But I think at that time, I talked myself out of it because I don't think I could have started the business on my own after going through what I went through. And also financially, it did take a big financial toll on us to be in the hospital for 10 weeks. I think if anybody's ever been in the hospital for a day or stayed overnight, you know how expensive it can be, even with insurance. So I kind of went back to my love in technology and kind of following blog posts. And at that time, I still, on a daily basis, I was still, you know, listening to podcasts and listening to, you know, reading tech articles and TechCrunch and this, seeing how that industry was just so changing, especially with the mobile phones and iPhones and stuff like that, new apps coming out and being exciting. I just felt like maybe it was an opportunity for me to get in there somehow. And I had the idea of building an iPhone app, because at that time we were spending so much time in the hospital, and we go to church pretty much on a regular basis. And I've been going to church for a good 15 years of my life. I didn't grow up going to church, but ended up going to church later in my life. And just, we felt like we just needed to go to church, you know, going through all that hard times. But it would have been too hard for us to go to our church, just because this, it was just so close to home for us that it would have been way too emotional for us to sit in church and be amongst our friends and family. So we decided to try a different church closer to the hospital just for a few weeks. And so I went to Google just to search, you know, churches in Tampa, try to find, you know, a decent church that we could drive to that was close and to spend the Sunday morning there to kind of, you know, get in touch with God spiritually, because we felt a little out of touch, you know, being in the hospital and this, you know, I guess just being not depressed, but more sad of our situation. And when I went to Google, I just could not find a church at all. I could not find a decent church. If I found the church, I couldn't find any information on the church. If you've seen the state of church websites, most of them are WordPress sites that are jam-packed with tons and tons of useless information about the church. To find a phone number or an address, there's quite a bit of digging that you have to do to find the location of church. And not all church websites are like this. So if you go to a church and your site's great, that's fine. But it was just horrible. And it wasn't like we were looking for a specific church. We were just looking for a church that was decent, that, you know, that maybe, you know, had a contemporary style worship or a decent service, and or even service times. Service times is huge. I don't know why a lot of churches don't have their service times on the page. But yeah, I just found that church websites weren't very useful for me. And it was even harder to even find the website just through Google. So I don't think churches have very good SEO also. So I came up with this idea of an iPhone app to be able to search churches by location base. So if I would be able to see Tampa, I could see, you know, the best churches and very simple information about that church. And so I decided, you know, I should probably build that website. I should do it myself. So I toyed with the idea of doing WordPress. I toyed with the idea of doing Android, iPhone, iOS, and decided that I just needed to learn how to program. Just generally, I just needed to learn how to program. So I started researching Objective-C and then learning that Objective-C, they recommend you learn C first. And so I was like, oh, okay, let me just learn C. So I ended up starting this How to Program, which is, I think it was howtoprogram.net. It's no longer available. I wrote a blog post about how I started. So I'll link that in the show notes. And then I didn't do show notes last week very well. So I'll have like a link section of links that I mentioned so far, which was just one so far. But unfortunately, this link's actually not live. So I guess that doesn't even matter. I guess I'm rambling. But so I started learning basic level C, and I just found that it was hard to learn C on your own, even going through tutorials. So I ended up I'd searched around for other languages and kind of fell into Ruby. I think I found a YouTube video, Matan Griffel's YouTube video of how he taught himself how to code in 1 month and learn Ruby on Rails in 1 month. And he gave his explanation of why he chose Rails and why he chose Ruby. And he basically sold me on learning code, how to learn Rails in 1 month. And then I ended up finding out that he actually had a course, which was 1 month Rails, which I think it's about $100 now. But at that time, I think it was only $50. And I ended up finding this 1 month Rails. I am defining about Ruby. I ended up diving headfirst into Ruby. I think I spent about a week just researching different things about Ruby and how it was a great language. And, you know, I think most people who do Ruby love Ruby. So most information that you get about Ruby is kind of tainted into that light. So you don't hear much negative stuff about Ruby. I mean, there is negative stuff about Ruby, but it's just a little harder to find. Just because it's just overwhelmed with a bunch how much people love Ruby. So I was in the I was basically in the camp of Ruby's the best and there's no reason to learn anything else. So needless to say, I started learning Ruby. At that time, we just got out of hospital, maybe a week. So I decided that I was going to learn how to program. I completely switched off of C. Didn't complete that tutorial and started doing some tutorials, mainly just watching YouTube videos and watching Udemy videos. And just basically fell in love with Ruby and kind of walked away from doing an iPhone app. And I felt like rather doing iPhone app, I was going to do a Rails site on this church site. And so I just started doing tutorials, didn't start the site, and just kind of wanted to learn the basics of everything. That's when I eventually found out about boot camps. I got a little extremely excited about boot camps, so much that I basically begged and pleaded my wife to let me move to Chicago or New York or San Francisco for 3 months or 9 weeks or whatever it was at that time, and so I can learn how to code. And needless to say, I did not get that opportunity because my wife basically talked me off the ledge. And I realized very quickly that I couldn't afford to quit my job for 3 months or 2 weeks or whatever it would have been and go and learn how to program. It just wasn't going to be feasible, especially coming out of, from being in the hospital and having bills to pay. I was a little disappointed, but I spent a lot of time, once I figured that Ruby was going to be my way into programming, I spent a lot of time looking at Ruby jobs and looking at job descriptions so that way I can get an idea of what sort of things I needed to learn outside of Ruby eventually to kind of put on my plate to learn, you know, different DevOps things, Postgres, SQL databases, and all that other stuff. Just trying to get an idea of what else I needed to learn to actually get a job or be competent in programming. At that time, when I was looking at these jobs, I ended up finding a job posting on Top Ruby Jobs for Block as a mentor. And I was a little intrigued that they were looking for a mentor, a part-time mentor, and they showed how much they were going to pay him and all that other stuff. Yeah, so I went to Block, found out they were an online bootcamp that focused on pairing people with mentors. And that whole idea of learning how to learn and learning from other people who are experienced in the industry, because that was my other issue. I would get stuck on certain things, not knowing how to do things. And I felt like I just didn't have the knowledge, enough knowledge to know where to go to search or to get myself out of those problems. And I felt like that was going to be the thing for me, was going to be Block. But so yeah, once I found out about Block, I was just excited. I think I don't even think I emailed them and asked them questions. I think I just asked my wife if it was okay. And I could think she, after knowing that I tried to go to a boot camp in person and move up to another city, and that there was an opportunity I could do it from home and online, she was pretty much, she wasn't convinced, but she okayed it. So I ended up signing up for Block, paying my down payment, because I think you had to pay like $1,000 up front. So I paid my down payment, and I ended up scheduling it out 1 month advance because I wasn't sure if that Block was going to, I still wasn't sure if Block was going to be the right way to go. So I gave myself a month because I never actually started the 1 month Rails tutorial. So I figured if I could do the 1 month Rails tutorial and teach myself how to code on my own and be confident enough that I possibly wouldn't need Block, then I would just go ahead and cancel that and get my money back. Because Block has a money back guarantee. So whatever portion of the course that you do and you don't, if you don't feel like this is working for you, you basically get refunded anything after that point. So if you go sit 4 weeks in, you get the other 8 weeks back. I felt like if I could teach myself and I didn't need Block, then I'd be fine. So I did 1 month Rails, and I did it so quickly. I actually did it in 2 days. Two Saturdays. I spent two Saturday nights working on that, and I finished it. Finished The site, which I have actually, I still have a lot up and going, which is ilikerobot.com. I'll put that in the show notes also. I had that site. That was my first Rails site, anything Ruby that I did up to that point. I only did like Codecademy and small problems. And so I never actually did a website up until that point. And I was pretty excited about that. I think I posted that on Facebook. I showed all my friends, basically walked around and showed them, you know, basically what I did. And I felt like I could basically, after doing 1 month for Rails, I was excited enough to do anything at that point. I even started a project for a friend. He had an idea for an application. And he's like, oh, you did the site. Maybe you could do this. But it's also an awesome way to learn what you don't know. So I started this site. I thought it was gonna be a site to text people, because they're doing photos at the church that I go to, that I went to. It was actually at a Christmas party, so they wanted to be able to text people that when they were next in line, rather than have people stand in line waiting. They just wanted to be able to just text them and say, "Hey, your turn's next. Please come to the photo booth." So I tried making that site. I figured I learned about Twilio, and I was going to implement Twilio and use their API and build a simple form to be able to talk to it, which now that I think about how simple this was, I could do this tonight if I wanted to, in maybe an hour. I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. I couldn't figure out how to work with Rails. I got so many errors. It was so mind-numbing. I couldn't figure out how to start a Rails project that wasn't from a tutorial. And that's when I basically figured out that maybe I needed to go with Block. So I tried that. I also tried another tutorial, because I figured if I could figure out how to create a form from another tutorial, that, because I think 1 month for Rails, they did a form, but it was very simple. It was a one input field form, which should have been fine. But yeah, I just couldn't figure it out. I tried another tutorial, which was actually in HAML instead of HTML. And then that was a whole nother learning curve that I couldn't figure out. So I basically just gave up. I completely just gave up on learning how to code until I started Block. And literally I started Block in December of 2013 and haven't looked back since. Completed that program. I blogged about my experience. So you can basically pick up my story from where I just left off, view my blog and see my story from where it went. But I'll just throw the link for my blog in there's a blog link on my site, for developing link for this podcast, developingstory.link. And so that's basically where I am now. I had a very, very, you know, interesting story getting to where I am. You know, I tried getting the finance. I worked very hard, ended up getting my interview skills up because of that. I got sales experience because of that. I did very well. And I forgot to mention that, you know, right after I started Block, I was promoted to a senior level sales position, just because my worth ethic and how hard I tried, I was able to get promoted then and also promoted after Block, which was ironic. But yeah, after Block, I got promoted again to not just a senior level, but actually a more of a leadership role and a consultant. Which was the title, as a solutions consultant or IT consultant. But I longed to get out of that job for a while and wanted to do something different. And I am definitely very happy for the position I have today and the position that I'll have actually in 2 weeks. And looking forward to my experiences in San Francisco. Some of you guys, so that's the end of my story. I'll leave it off at there. Hopefully you got something out of it. This was actually the second time I recorded it. The first time I recorded it, I didn't have the mic turned on. So I tried to repeat the same information that I gave the first time. Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to my career in San Francisco, my experiences. I have had so many people actually reach out. I really appreciate that. People reaching out telling me that their experiences in San Francisco and Oakland and East Bay, and gave me some information, you know, places to eat, places to check out, where to live. You know, that's all very much appreciated. You know, if anybody else is out there that, you know, lives in the area or had lived in the area, definitely reach out to me. I've got contact information on my site. And yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to what's in store. This was a longer podcast. I don't expect podcast to be this long, just because with the one person talking kind of gets a little much, but I really appreciate you listening to this entire episode. I know it was long-winded, but you know, I feel like my origin story needed to be out there. With that being said, I am going to announce, I said I was going to do a blog post, but I'm not going to do a blog post. I'm going to announce what company I'm working with next week on the next episode. So if you are interested in knowing that, I will let you know that. Also let you know what my story is like next week, as far as packing and moving and doing my last day at IZEA. So far, I've been wrapping up this last story that I've been working on for actually quite a while. It's been broken up into multiple stories, and this will be the last leg of it. And I won't go into details today. I don't want to share any business information for IZEA, but I am definitely looking forward to closing that out and closing out that chapter of my life and moving on to San Francisco. So, guys, thanks again for listening. This is Just Developing Life, the podcast.